to take what he wanted, and that is the identity of the firstborn son. From his brother, who was weakened with hunger or just too stupid to care what he was doing. Some might say that Jacob was an identity thief, but it seems pretty clear to me that Esau gave up what was important in exchange for lentil soup. In the opening scene here, we notice that Melissa McCarthy is obviously a fraud and obviously is calling to get some personal information from Jason Bateman, who is named Sandy Bigelow Patterson. And so she can take on the identity of Sandy Bigelow Patterson. She does so from the mall food court. And she simply calls this man and with saying a few words, asks for his identity. And he gives it. If you notice there, she didn't steal anything. She just simply said, I want to sell you something for free. And all I need is your social security number, which he happily gives to her, which sets the stage for her taking his identity and a lot of funny, crazy antics that happen afterwards. So she didn't steal it, really. She took it, and he willingly gave it. So why Jacob wanted this identity as a firstborn so badly, why was being the firstborn so important to him? You may remember that Rebecca receives this message while she's pregnant. You remember her pregnancy. It was a difficult one. She was pregnant with these twin boys who were fighting in her womb, and she goes to God and says, if this is how it is to be, I just would rather die. And God says to her in an oracle, you will give birth to two boys, and the two are like two nations that are wrestling in your womb, and the younger shall serve the older, and the older shall be the weaker of the two. So was Jacob simply wanting to fulfill his destiny? Was he aware of the oracle that had been spoken to his mother? I don't know. Since the history of God's people starts with this promise to Abraham that through his family line, through Isaac, and through the descendants afterwards, that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars, and these would be the children of God. So does each generation that come after Isaac have to fight to be the one to carry the promise? Is that what he was so interested in? Is the blessing of God a little bit like the crown? Only one sibling can wear the crown. Only one sibling can be the king or the queen of God's promise. Recently, I've noticed, and maybe you have too, there's been an increase in interest in Princess Diana. And I realize that the reason why is the 20th anniversary of her death is the end of this month. You may have figured that out. I bet you can remember where you were when you heard about that tragic, horrible death. And I would imagine that you have been following the royals maybe as much as I have been. How many of you stayed up all night in 1982 to watch the wedding? Just two of us did that? Come on. That was before the day we could DVR it. I'm pretty confident some of you stayed up to watch that wedding. But I can remember just even my grandmother and my mother following the story of the royals along the way, the generations that came, the scandal that accompanied each generation that went by. I think that they are fascinating people, and I have recently enjoyed watching the show The Crown on Netflix. Anybody watching The Crown? Okay, good. So it's always hard when I ask y'all questions and you act like, I don't know. No one's heard of that. But The Crown. I don't know who you are, Laurie Mueller. We don't know what you're talking about. Okay, The Crown. So it's and that is actually, I think, a tasteful kind of show. I probably could have shown a clip from. But anyway, the thing I love about the show so much is how it presents the queen as a real person. That you get to know her sort of as she was before she became queen. And as you know, she has taken on the role of queen for over 60 years, and from what I can tell, has no interest in letting go of that crown anytime soon. I'd forgotten the storyline about her father. I did see the King's Speech and remembered the wonderful story about her father, King George, but I had forgotten that King Edward was actually George's brother, older brother, who rightfully should have had the crown and did for nearly a year until he abdicated the throne because it was not acceptable for him to be married to a twice-divorced woman from America. So, heaven forbid. So, as the story goes, he abdicated the throne for the love of his life and gave it to his brother George. And so, therefore, the queen, who maybe wouldn't have been the queen at all if King Edward hadn't fallen in love with this other lady, but she becomes the queen because of that circumstance. And from the day one, she continues to hold tightly to that identity. Now, Edward gave up his identity as King of England and handed it over to his brother George. Esau gave up his birthright and handed it over to Jacob. There's no stolen identity here. Though Jacob made it clear he wanted the position, he did not steal it from Esau, at least not in this early interaction over lentil stew. Which means to me that stealing one's true identity is not really possible. We give away our identity, either because we're distracted by our hunger for something other than what we have, or because we fail to see its worth. Last week we talked about our born identity as a child of God, as God's beloved. Our baptism is the celebration of that identity, of our born identity, an identity that cannot be taken from us. No one can take away who we are. No one can take away the identity deep in our fiber the waters of baptism have made true. But like Esau, we can give it away without even thinking twice when we fail to realize the value. When we decide at any given moment, either because we're hungry for something else or we fail to see its worth, we can decide to give away our born identity just like that. So what does it look like for you and me to give away our identity as a child of God, our baptism? Or what does it mean to walk away from it in exchange for something we are convinced is better? Several years ago, I had a church member whose husband had passed away, and I had heard about her and heard that she was grieving and no longer left her home. And so I made a visit to her, and I had just had an image in my head of the dynamics. This woman was in terrible grief, was no longer able to come to church, and I expected her to be quite elderly and an invalid. I went to see her in her home, and I could hardly believe that she was, I'm sure at the time, it's 20 years ago, I thought she was a lot older than this, but I think she was only like 70, so come on. And in very good health, but overcome with grief and shame. She carried some sense of guilt and responsibility for her husband's death, even though I saw no reason for that to be the case. But I also was surprised to know he had died 10 years before, not just recently like I had thought. The pain was right at the surface. Her grief was dominant in her life. It was her main identity. Was her shame and her guilt. The guilt that had caused her to stop living, so she had forgotten her identity. She had allowed her identity to slip away. The freedom of God's grace and love, she was trapped rather in the identity of shame and guilt. Many times we're not even asked to give away our identity, but I think we give it away anyway when we ignore God's grace. I mentioned last week that infant baptism is a theological statement. A baby can do nothing to earn God's love, just as a baby can do nothing bad enough to separate himself or herself from God's love. God's grace is about God and God's great love for us. God's grace is not about us and our ability to earn it or even have a changed heart enough to realize it. Our identity as a child of God is about God's goodness and not our own. With adult baptism, which is just as legitimate and just as theologically powerful, but we can easily be confused to think that baptism is about our choosing God and not God's choosing us. As if we could get our hearts repentant enough or our sins in check enough to sit at the table. When in truth, we're all sinners, even with the best of intentions. Baptism is the recognition that God loves us anyway. So when we fail to forgive others or to forgive ourselves, we give away our identity. Like Esau, who did not consider his birthright at all that important, we begin to think that forgiveness that we have received and will receive through the power of the cross is just not that important. What becomes more important to us is to feel guilty or to live in shame. So we just willingly give away our identity. How many times have we let resentment fester in our hearts in such a way that we do just unintentionally give away our identity as a forgiven and reconciled and beloved child of God? So we give away our identity when we do not live in the grace and the mercy that we receive through Jesus Christ. But another way we carelessly give away our identity is when we choose law over love. One of our greatest struggles, I believe, as the people of God, is choosing law and ignoring love. I think one of our greatest struggles as the people of God is truly believing God's love and trusting in God's love. For some reason, we have a penchant for law. We like rules. We like law because it defines who's in and who's out. It gives us a grade. We all kind of like to know what our grade is in life. You know, are we an A-plus person? How are we shaping up? Are we good? Are we bad? Are they good or are they bad? Others can be judged, and we love this way of living because we get our identities, like I said, from who we're not rather than who we are. Law makes for enemies, an us versus them kind of world, and Jesus came to fulfill the law. He told us himself. But we must not be all convinced of that because we continue time and time again to choose law over love. And in so doing, we give away our identity just like that as a child of God. The people of God before Jesus came spent much of the time on the law. In fact, they spent all their time on the law because that was their identity. But we are children of the Most High God. We are the sons and the daughters. We are the brothers and sisters of Christ who gives us our identity in love. Jesus came for a new covenant, a covenant that establishes us based on God's great love for us and not our ability to fulfill or complete any laws. So every time we judge another and judge another's worth based on how they have measured up to the Christian way of living or you know, we say love the sinner, hate the sin, every time we say that, we're tossing away our identity. Because we're choosing law over love, and in so doing, we're willingly giving away our identity as a child of God. So refusing God's grace and choosing law over love are two ways that we do give up our birthright. But yesterday, I was reminded of a third way that we willingly and carelessly give away our identity. In Charlottesville, Virginia, a group gathered to give voice to hate. I'm pretty sure that many of those gentlemen, and I'm sure there were some women there too, but the men, the white supremacist voice, I'm pretty sure there were many of them who were baptized children of God. I'm pretty sure that the waters of God's grace and God's love had been sprinkled on many of those heads, and that a blessing had been given upon them. I'm pretty sure that these white Christians who willingly tossed aside their identities as beloved children of God in exchange for demonstrating their hate and resentment for others. Now, I'm not interested in making a political statement because in so many ways, the horror and ridiculous behavior of yesterday is not so much political as it is theological. Whenever there is a group, wherever, anywhere, that claims to be superior in race, superior in creed, superior in color, superior over other of God's creation. Whenever the voice of hate is accepted or tolerated, the church must defend the identity of the children of God. God is weeping. Claiming the identity of a child of God first and foremost affirms that all others are children of God as well. We are all sinners. We have all fallen short of the grace of God. When we claim our identity as God's beloved, we claim the truth of Christ. And that's God's great love for God's people. What happened yesterday is a statement about complete disrespect for what God has done for each and every one of us. Jesus, our God incarnate, knew the shame and suffering of oppression and hatred, knew it all too well. He spoke out against a racial divide. He ate with sinners. He took the hands of the Samaritan woman. He knew what it meant to be abused by a system of power. He suffered on the cross so that the world would know that God's power and promise bring peace and forgiveness and to claim the world as his own through the very blood he shed. So tossing away our identity as God's beloved in exchange for the evil lie of superiority can be done in a violent protest. It can also happen when any time we look down on another, any time in a thought or a gesture we think we're somehow better than, we toss away our Christian identity. Any time we fail to honor the worth of another human life, we've given away our birthright. My hope for each of us, and my hope for Christians everywhere, and my hope for God's people and children in all the world, that our true identity as a child of God, that we cling to it, that because we're hungry for power, which is about as lasting as a bowl of lentil stew, that we not toss it aside. I pray that each one of us here would cling tightly to who we are and never, ever take for granted that truth. There is a scene in one of the episodes of The Crown. It's the coronation episode. And Edward, who was asked not to attend the coronation because of his wife, is seen, you can see the back of him, and he's playing the bagpipes, and he's looking over on his estate as the setting sun, and you can hear him playing the bagpipes, and then the camera comes around and shows his face. And he's weeping. Bitter, bitter tears of regret. These are the tears of one who gave away his identity and wishes maybe he hadn't. I pray that we all feel those tears of regret burn on our cheeks when we fail to forgive, when we fail to love, and when we fail to respect the love that God has for all God's people. The forgiveness, the love, and the redemption that is offered to us without price through Jesus Christ. For you and for me, and for even the ones who are willing to toss it aside. Thanks be to God. Amen. Let's join in prayer together. Wonderful, loving God, I know that you weep this morning for the pain and suffering of your children. I know, O God, that you continue to love us and call us and claim us even when we forget whose we are. Lord, I pray for the healing of this world. I pray that we would all live fully and completely our identity as your beloved child. That we never toss away that truth in exchange for power or the passing need to feel affirmed. May we cling tightly to who we are, and may we know fully and completely, O God, that your forgiveness calls us home, calls us to be bearers of peace and words of love in the world. May your light overtake all the darkness, and may we allow that light to shine through us. And we ask all of this in Jesus' precious and holy name.